This episode is brought to you by Book Thinkers. Do you want to reach more readers, grow your audience, and supercharge your impact? Well, at Book Thinkers, they believe the right books at the right time can change lives. Now, you have put serious time into researching, writing, and editing a book, and the idea of marketing can be deflating. Well, truth be told, it doesn't have to be. You've spent a lot of time writing your book for personal development because you want to help readers make positive changes and improve their lives. Where authors get stuck isn't writing or publishing. It's ensuring their target reader gets their hands on the finished book. That's where Book Thinkers come in. They have worked alongside hundreds of authors, from first-time writers to best-selling authors, to help get their book in front of the right reader. And those readers don't just read, they connect. For Book Thinkers, they help video production for authors, book reviews, podcast booking, and even social media management. Now, quick question. Are you ready to change more lives? Well, if you are, then you can go to www.bookthinkers.com and get more eyes on your books now. As we all know, the more you read, the more you know, the more you learn, and the more you grow. Now, quick question for all of you is that, are you devouring every personal development bestseller out there but still finding it hard to apply what you have learned to your everyday life? Well, fret not, because today this amazing guest and I have your back. Hi, my name is Rayson Chu, and I'm your host for The Legacy Show. And in this episode, we've invited an inspiring author. His name is none other than Nick Hutchison. Nick stands as the visionary force behind Book Thinkers, which is a growing seven-figure marketing agency that seamlessly bridges the worlds of authors and readers. And in just over 7 years, he has organically built a platform that reaches over 1 million people each month. Nick's podcast, Book Thinkers, Life-Changing Books, is a global top 2% show that features captivating interviews with world-class authors such as Grant Cardone, Lewis House, and Alex Hormozi. And through the use of his platform, Nick has helped hundreds of authors expand their reach to hundreds of millions of readers and drive significant revenue growth as part of their book campaigns. His services include short-form video production, podcast booking, and social media book reviews. Well, without further ado, let's welcome Nick into the podcast. Woohoo! Hey, Nick.
Yay. What's going on, man? Yeah, I'm excited to be here. Thank you for the opportunity. Can I ask you the first question today?
Sure.
What is your favorite book of all time? I mean, I know you've interviewed a lot of the same people that I have and a lot of really interesting authors. So I'm just curious, who's your favorite author? What's your favorite book?
Okay, cool. So for my favorite book is actually by this guy called Dale Carnegie. And it's actually How to Win Friends and Influence People. This is by far the best manual script for anyone who wants to learn about networking and how to make friends. It's just like, you know, the title, How to Win Friends and Influence People. So I truly believe that this is a really solid book that everyone should actually check it out.
Yes, I love that book too. And one of my favorite takeaways from that book is using somebody else's name. It's the, yes. What does he say? It's like the sweetest word in the vocabulary or something. So I appreciate that, Rayson. Thank you.
Pleasure. Then how about yours, Nick? What's your favorite book?
My favorite book of all time is The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. When I read that book, I was working a normal 9-to-5 job. I was location dependent. And here I am a number of years later with my own business. I travel the world. I interview cool people. And I've designed something that's fulfilling to me. And it's all because of that book. It's a really good one.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool, cool. Well, I'm pretty sure those people who are listening to this podcast, they would have heard of Tim Ferriss 4-Hour Work Week, or even have dabbled into it or tried it out. And maybe you know, have gotten some fruits from it. And of course, talking about fruits, we're going to talk a little bit more about it later on in terms of how people can actually read and also at the same time apply all their techniques and secrets into real life situations as well. And that is something that you are an expert in, because that's why you have this book called Rise of the Readers. And, you know, before we actually go into detail about all this stuff, oh yes, that is the book, all right? That is the book, right? That is amazing book, which we're going to slice it open, talk a lot about it later on. And of course, you know, speaking of which, Nick, how have you been, man? It's been a while. We have been chatting on emails and et cetera. And man, finally got to speak with you in person.
Yeah, well, I'm doing really well. Thank you for asking me. let's see, my book launches in 2 weeks from the time that we're recording this. And so it's been a little bit of a whirlwind for me. A lot of book promotion, podcasts, interviews, collaborations, nice. You know, working with people behind the scenes. So I'm really excited for the book to be available. I believe the right book at the right time can change somebody's life. And I believe this book is going to change a lot of lives. It will help people get more from the books they're reading. And life is good, man. Life is good. You know what I optimize for? Enjoying the passage of time. And I enjoy my time, man. I do what I like to do and I don't do what I don't like to do. And so life is good, man. How about you? What's new in your world?
Oh, nice. Well, I would say that, you know, things are going much more smoother right now as compared to last month. But this month and so on, we are actually building something for podcasters. So my nice. Team and I, we are actually building something called the Podcast League. So we are actually creating something like a subscription base for podcasters or for aspiring podcasters who want to learn how to create their own podcast, who want to build their own podcast, and they have no clue how to do it, and they have no venue to actually host their podcast or even record their podcast in terms of audio or video, then we are the people to look for, because we have the location, we have the equipment that we can rent it out to you as well. So this is something that we are building, and we are looking towards launching it in December. So you guys can stay tuned for this interesting yet exciting new beginning for Legacy Media.
Right? Oh, congratulations. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, and I'm thankful that we are partnering up with certain brands as well. That have actually reached out to us and they want to be our sponsors or even sponsors for the new podcasters as well. And I'm looking forward to actually build this up and not just launching it in Singapore, but we are looking towards going global. So Singapore is, but we are looking towards going towards other places as well.
Nice. Well, when I visit Singapore, we'll have to record in one of these studios that you're helping to build.
Oh, yes, definitely. Definitely. Sure. Well, it will be my honor to have you in Singapore as well. And we can talk a lot and a lot about this. And we can, you know, have a meetup with my team as well. And my team would love to get to meet you up, because I've shared a lot of stuff about you to them. Positive stuff, a lot of positive things that you have done, especially recently when you had your Book Thinkers meetup, you meeting with so many of these authors that some of them have actually appeared on my podcast, like Laura Kasserman and many more that I saw. I was like, wow. And even Lewis House is like you know, one of the huge guests that was I would say she was there on the meetup as well, if I'm not wrong, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yes, 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 yes. Wow. Okay, cool, cool. Looking forward to all this you know, meetups and all. And hopefully we can get Luis onto the podcast as well. And yeah. Man, that will be my dream come true.
Yeah, Luis is he's somebody who, and I'll share a little secret here. And I think this is true for a lot of people. I mean, you've interviewed a lot of great names as well, but oftentimes in anticipation of a book launch, like right before somebody's book comes out, they'll say yes to everything. So for Lewis, I asked him year after year after year, he always said, not yet, not yet. When my next book comes out, sure. And then finally, when he announced the book that he put out earlier this year, I was able to have him on the show. You know, and now we've collaborated and we hosted our event on the front side of his event and everything this year. But yeah, I think that's the secret. Like right before a book launch, they just say yes to everybody.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'll remember this secret. I'll remember this secret. And that is to look for them right before their book launch.
Yes.
And get them onto the podcast. And Nick, you know, I would say that many people would know you in the States, and not many of them would have known you in Singapore. So can you actually share with the audience a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
Absolutely. It might surprise everybody in your audience that can see my video because I have like 1,000 books behind me. But when I was growing up, I was not much of a reader. In fact, I didn't think reading was cool. Like you couldn't pay me to read a book. I was more of the athlete stereotype, not really much of the academic. But that all changed when I was going into my senior year of college. So I was 20, 21 years old. I took an internship at a local software company. And my boss at the time, he introduced me to podcasts. He said something to me really interesting one time along the lines of like listening to the same song on your commute here in the car for the 1,000th time. It's not going to get you closer to where you want to be in life, but the right podcast might. You should consider listening to business podcasts, just like your show. And so I said, all right, I'll give it a shot. And I had about a 1-hour commute each way, 5 days a week. So 10 hours in the car. And I just started listening to 10 to 15 podcasts per week. And what was interesting was that so many of the successful people being interviewed on these shows, they were giving at least some credit for their success to the books that they were reading. So I just kind of had this moment where I realized that if I was choosing not to read books, then I was also choosing to live under my potential. And that's when I decided to start reading. And, you know, from there, I decided to start posting the books that I was reading on social media, really just to connect with like-minded people, maybe build a little audience for an app that we were trying to build, which didn't come out. But I started to work with authors. They would reach out to me and they'd say, hey, you know, we like your book reviews. Can we pay you to review our books? And I said, yeah, of course. Oh, nice. And then from there, I would always follow up and I'd say like, hey, what else can I help you with? So today, my marketing agency helps to support authors. We help them promote and market their books, get them connected to great shows like your show, help them with content, put them in front of our audience. We've got 10 people on my team now. And yeah, I get to work with a lot of all of my favorite authors, which is really fun. So all of this is the result of reading and implementing good books. I think that the right book at the right time can change your life, especially in business. And so I'm just out here trying to spread the positive power of personal development books. And then with my book, teach people how to get more from the books they're reading. So that's a little bit about me and kind of how I came to be on this podcast.
Oh, nice. Okay. So, that is really interesting, especially for a boss to actually recommend you to listen to podcasts, because probably he knew that, Nick just doesn't like to read. So why not let him listen to something? And which podcast did he recommend to you back then?
Well, we've already mentioned one of the names, which is the Tim Ferriss Show. Tim Ferriss, one of my favorite podcasters. And I listen to all sorts of stuff. I mean, I listen to Bigger Pockets, which was a real estate podcast. I listened to a show called The Science of Success with Matt Bodner. That was more about like a deep dive, into like the science of how things work and like cognitive biases and growth mindsets and stuff. So yeah, a lot of really good info.
Oh, nice. So out of all these podcasts that you have listened to, so I believe Tim Ferriss podcast is still by far your most favorite. Am I right to say that?
Yes. Yeah. I like to say that Tim Ferriss, he doesn't know who I am. At least I don't think he does. But, he's my favorite. I listen to his podcast a lot. The 4-Hour Workweek is my favorite book. I've consumed a bunch of other material that he's helped to support. So he's so good. He's like a human guinea pig, and he's great at business and he's great at health. And those are two of my favorite places to study.
Right. I agree with you on that. And many people was starting to actually model from him as well, talking about business and health alongside with other things along the way. And they are modeling from his podcast as well. And I find that, man, he is the trailblazer for podcasting, especially, you know, other than Joe Rogan and all the other names that are there. But I truly believe that Tim is one hell of a podcaster that has made a huge way for himself, because not many people are able to do what he does and what he did. And he even came up with, you know, books on what were the questions that he asked. And some of the questions, when I first started out my podcast, I actually followed his questions.
Me too.
And it was really interesting to hear how people were to actually share their experiences based on those questions. And it's really interesting. And to be frank, you know, one of the questions or two of the questions that we have over here later on, which I'm going to ask you, were from him, and it was inspired by him. So yeah, it's really something that I find, you know, it's he has actually made this podcasting game a huge game changer for everyone, in a sense.
Yes. Yeah, he has. I actually have a tattoo on my wrist that says reality is negotiable. And that's a quote from the 4-Hour Work Week. So that just goes to show you how important it is for me.
Wow. Okay. Tim, if you are listening to this podcast, please go and check Nick out, because he is one hell of a big fan of yours. And we'll see how we can actually get Tim on to, you know, Book Thinkers, right? And
yeah, that would be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Probably you can actually get Lewis or whoever that's close to him to actually get him onto your radar.
Yeah, and you mentioned another name, another one of my favorites. He hasn't written a book yet, but Joe Rogan. I love his podcast, and I love how he invites people on from every area that interests him. He's just so curious. He's not judgmental. He's sort of in the middle politically, you know, and he just wants to hear from people and ask good questions. And I have a lot of respect for Joe as well.
Oh, yeah, especially the episode where he and Elon Musk actually smoked weed and had a good chat over there. that was epic, in my opinion. That was the most epic one I've
ever. That's illegal in Singapore, right?
Oh, yeah. Weed is illegal in Singapore, ironically. And but of course, you know, drugs and all these are really illegal in Singapore as compared to the States, because weed and marijuana, you can be used for medicinal purpose. But here, if you say that it's for medicinal purpose, they won't care, and they will even charge you into the jail. So it's best not to commit that crime. And and I'd like to ask you, right, Nick, can you tell us a bit about your backstory on how you became an author? Because I know you actually worked for someone before, but how did you actually transition from that to an entrepreneur and author itself?
Sure. So entrepreneurship first. As I started to get paid for book reviews, I thought, oh, I wonder if I could work full time in the personal development industry someday. I had a full-time sales job. And I started to read a lot of business books. I started to read books about entrepreneurship. I started to read biographies and autobiographies by some of the world's best entrepreneurs. And I wanted to understand what that journey looks like for people. And I realized over time that we tend to overcomplicate it, especially over here in the United States. Like, the stoic entrepreneur who risks it all, you know, is glorified. But that's not what happens in 95% of situations. Because the fact is, 95% of small businesses fail in the first 5 years because they run out of money, they give up, they don't end up finding a product market fit. And so I wanted to go at it slow and steady. I remember Gary Vee said once in a video, find a full-time job that teaches you skills that you can use to build your side hustle. And so that's what I did. I had a full-time sales job and I was working in a small business. So I was using everything I was learning to build Book Thinkers on the side. I had a 9 to 5 and then I had a 5 to 9, really. And I wanted to jump really early. Like once I started to make a little bit of money, I wanted to jump over and do it full time. But I had a mentor of mine, Kevin. He said, Nick, don't jump off the cliff and try to build the parachute on the way down. That's how you're going to end up failing. He said, you'll operate from a place of scarcity. You'll compromise on your values. You'll discount your services. You'll end up running out of money. And then you'll go back to work in a full-time job with your tail tucked between your legs and you'll give up. So he said, don't quit your job. Just keep building slow and steady. And you know what? I took that advice to heart because, again, I read so many stories about people who failed and never ended up trying again, only to regret the fact that they just jumped too soon. So right. Book Thinkers, my agency, actually had full-time employees, and it was doing over 6 figures in revenue before I even made the jump. So that was, that was me mitigating risk as much as I possibly could. I just built it on the side, and instead of paying myself, the other company was paying me. So I reinvested that money back into the business. And like I said, today, our agency, we serve about 200 authors a year. We help them promote and market their books. And I'm so happy that I waited. Now I'll tell you the story about the book. Over the years of building my community, I've interacted with millions and millions of people through social media. And I've received some of the same questions hundreds of times each. How do I choose the right book? How do I take good notes? How do I retain more from the books I'm reading? How do I implement them and take better action? And of course, I would answer everybody. Like I am of service to my community. I care about impact. But I realized that I was also underserving those people because sending a quick voice note or jumping on a quick Zoom call wasn't enough. Like I needed to document everything I was doing to get the most out of these books. And so I decided to write a book on the subject. And it was actually really hard to do for me. I spent about 3 years on this project. Because I had never taken the time to like pause and observe my own behavior. I didn't even really know what I was doing to implement books. And so I had to like watch myself and just document the process. And then I had to name these frameworks and define them and simplify them and add steps and do a bunch of research to support why I was doing certain things. And like, so yeah, you know, this book, Rise of the Reader, is the result of reading and implementing hundreds of books to create my dream life and my dream business. And I think everybody else can do the same because, and I'll kind of wrap up here, these books behind me and behind you, they condense decades of valuable lived experience and information into days of reading. There's no better equation than that. You get to experience what took somebody else 40 years to learn in a couple of hours. So yeah, I'm 29 years old, but if you include all of the books behind me, I'm thousands of years old. That's how I think about it.
Oh, nice. Well, you don't look like you're 29, man. You look younger than that.
And I'm focused on biohacking. That's why.
Uh-huh. Tim Ferriss, biohacking.
Tim Ferriss, yep.
Okay, cool. Wow. So I would say that, yeah, I mean, this is something that we're going to talk a lot about in terms of your book-wise later on. But I would like to ask you, right, how long did it take you to actually decide to make that leap of faith, take that leap of faith and quitting your job, your 9-to-5 job? Because you said that you were actually building 6 figures income from there and you have some firm staff that's working with you for you as well, and while you're still working in a job itself, was it like more than 3 years or 5 years that it took you to actually leave that job? and start and to actually fully focus on your business?
Yeah, so 2017 is when BookThinkers was officially started, but we didn't make any money in 2017 or 2018. 2019, I started to have a little bit of traction, and it was really 2020 where I wanted to make that first jump. And my boss, so we're already a few years in. My boss said, hey, don't make the jump. Like, not my boss, my mentor, Kevin. He said, don't make the jump, like continue to build it. So now 2021, six figures, 2022, six figures. And finally, actually, it was at the beginning of this year, 2023, I technically quit my job. But it's kind of a long story because my full-time job, the company that I was working for was acquired twice. And as it got acquired, I didn't raise my hand and take on more responsibility. I sort of like shrank down and like everybody forgot about me, but I was still there, right? So I was making really good money, but I wasn't working very much. And I could have continued to do that. Like it was only 5 to 10 hours a week by the time that I officially quit. So per hour, I was making a ton of money, but it was more about this mindset. Like I was interviewed on a podcast earlier this year and the host of the podcast said to me, like, what's it feel like to be an entrepreneur? And I said, I mean, it feels great, but I don't know if I technically am an entrepreneur because I still have a job, even though the job was 5 to 10 hours a week because I had automated it and everything. Like it still didn't feel like I was fully committed to BookThinkers or this book that I was launching this year. So it took me a long time to officially quit, not because the business of BookThinkers wasn't successful, but really because per hour I was making so much money over there that I just didn't want to leave.
Okay. So you're saying that, you know, when you know that it's the right time, which is the amount of money that you're earning as compared to what you're earning from your job is higher, and you are, rather than, you know, being so complacent in what you're doing, but you are more, I would say complacent, but more comfortable in your job, rather than you are, how do I put it? Like you are more comfortable in what you're doing, but then you realize that, hey, you need to make that leap of faith. Then that is the time when you say, okay, I got to go, because you're earning more from your business than leave from there, in a sense, right?
Right. And what was interesting too, is that when I quit and I went full-time into BookThinkers, the first month that I was full-time at BookThinkers, we doubled our revenue. And it wasn't because of additional time. Right. Again, I was only working 5 or 10 hours a week in this other job, but it was because right. Like the universe was almost like rewarding me for finally making the jump, I think.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I agree with you on that. I mean, sometimes when it's time to jump, you jump, and then the universe will just bless you with more blessings in your business and things like that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And I would like to ask you, right, you know, I'm pretty sure while working and while building your business up, I'm pretty sure you would have had some failures, had some mistakes along the way, right? So, Nick, do you have a favorite failure of yours? And how has that failure or apparent failure set you up for later success?
I have tons of favorite failures, but I guess favorite is a singular term, right? So do I have one? Yes. When BookThinkers first started, I had two business partners, and we wanted to build a mobile application that could help readers retain and implement more from the books they were reading. And as recent college graduates without much money, we poured everything we had into that business. Tens of thousands of dollars US, hundreds of hours of our time. And we outsourced everything to a company in Argentina. And they never really finished the product, and the business sort of fell apart, and we ran out of money. So here we were, like after a year worth of consistent effort, spent all of our money and all of our time, and we had nothing to show for it. So yeah, that was tough. You know, it was like, is entrepreneurship really for me? Like, am I capable of building a business? I'm not really sure. But again, one of my issues, especially over here in the US with the public education system, is that we're taught that failure is a bad thing, and we're taught to avoid failure. You'll get penalized in school if you don't answer questions the way the teacher wants you to answer them. I mean, there really are a lot of like individual beliefs that teachers try to push on us. So I try to avoid failure, but then in business, you realize like failure is the best. Failure is where everything happens. That's the magic. And so now I run at failure full speed. So that big failure with the mobile app company, I learned a couple of things. Number one, I am not a technology guy. I'm a marketing guy. Number two, if I was to relaunch a new piece of technology in the future, I would have to have a tech person on my staff, like as part of my business. You can't just outsource everything. Number three, I learned that failure is beautiful. It teaches you what not to do, right? And I think I've realized over time that the faster you can fail, the more often you can fail, the faster you can learn and iterate and change and improve, and the closer you'll get to your dreams. There's a line in Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki where he says that, he goes, I've met a lot of poor people who have never lost money investing, but I've never met a rich person who hasn't lost money investing. And so it's like, you got to get out there and take risks. Like if you choose not to take risks, yeah, you'll play it safe. You'll never lose any money investing, but you'll never make any money either. Same thing in business. Right. If you never fail, that's okay, but you're not going to grow either. And that's the part that people miss.
True. Yeah. You got to be a risk taker rather than, staying in your comfort zone and not going to take that risk and go and get your dreams out into the wildest dreams and go and get it, go and make it happen in real life, because you only have one life to live. You can't be, just be waiting and not go and pursue what you really want to achieve. So I really agree with you on this in terms of going out there, fail however you want, how many times you want, because failure is still feedback to your success as long as you learn from it. And I would like to ask you, right, Nick, I'm pretty sure while you are building a business up, besides Kevin, there are many other mentors that you have met along the way. So can you share with us, like, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received from them?
These are all of my mentors right here. I think, how else would I get access to what Steve Jobs thinks about, or Richard Branson, or Elon Musk? I just read books about them. The best piece of advice that I've ever received, other than what Kevin told me, which in summary was like, slow and steady wins the race. The best piece of advice I've ever received. You know what? I give a lot of credit to both of my parents. They're mentors of mine. They both told me I was capable of achieving whatever I wanted to in life. I think sometimes, parents can reinforce limiting beliefs. They can project their own fears on you. My parents never did that, which was really nice. So for my book, I've actually dedicated, like right in the very beginning, I wrote a little note to my parents, just kind of thanking them and believing in me, that I was capable of going out there and building the life that I wanted. Yeah, there was a little resistance, I think, quitting my full-time job and going into Book Thinkers at first. They don't want me to fail or anything like that, but I've just shared with them at every step of the way, like how important it is for me to design my own reality. And like that tattoo, right, that reality is negotiable. I can build something super fulfilling, make a ton of money, be super happy, super healthy, have great relationships, but that's not going to happen working a normal 9-to-5 job. I think just that's the best advice. Like, hey, Nick, you're capable of doing anything that you want. Like, go out there and build it, and we support you. And that felt really good.
Yeah, it definitely feels really good, especially when your parents are supportive of your dreams. and they are encouraging you to go and achieve them. And, you know, that this kind of support is not common. Sometimes it's really rare. Not all parents would want their kids to really go and pursue their goals and dreams because they want them to be protected. They want them to be safe. So that's why they wouldn't want them to go and pursue their goals and dreams. Just like them, they didn't go and pursue their dreams probably because of fear and because of what their parents have taught them and how every generation has passed down to, oh, be safe and secure. That's it. Not risk taker. Don't be a risk taker in a sense.
Yeah.
So yeah, I love what you have shared with us in terms of what your parents have said. This is really amazing. And Nick, if you could have a gigantic billboard anywhere with anything on it, what would it say and why?
It would say Tim Ferriss is the man.
All right. Yeah. Tim will be proud of us. While I'm using Tim's questions, you are using his motto and his quotes to actually live by and recommending him to everyone that's tuning into this podcast. So yeah, okay. Besides that, is that what you're gonna use?
I would put this quote. I'll read it to you right now. It's a quote from Mark Twain, and I have it on my bookmarks. It says, quote, "The man who does not read good books is no better than the man who can't." Mark Twain. And the point of that quote is that we're all capable of reading and implementing personal development books. Remember, these books shortcut 20, 30, 40 years of life experience into days of reading. And if you actively choose not to read them, then you're actively choosing to live under your potential. And I've read too many books about people who regret not having done more, taken risks, done something that they enjoyed. There's so much of this out there. People just being sheep, you know, going through their day to day, not really thinking, not enjoying anything, upset, depressed, anxious. And life doesn't have to be so hard. And it's because of us choosing not to read these books. Here's the fact. 100 billion people have lived before us. 100 billion. Millions of them have written books. And thousands of those books could help you solve the same problems that you're dealing with today. The following math is pretty scary. If you deal with a pain or a problem on a daily basis over the next 30 years, so 365 times 30, it's 11,000 times. So why not read a book, implement the solution? Because again, somebody else has already figured it out, and then be pain-free 10,950 days or whatever. I would put that quote, "The man who does not read good books is no better than the man who can't."
Right. Totally agree with that quote. And man, that is something that I believe many of us would be ashamed of, especially when we thought we know a lot of stuff and we don't bother to read because we thought that, you know, reading is boring and all. I truly implore all of you who are tuning in to this podcast episode right now to actually go and read, regardless whether is it 5 minutes a day or maybe 5 minutes in the morning or however you want it. Just read, and I'm pretty sure you'll be inspired by those authors that you really
start with this one
at all. And of course, like just like this book, Rise of the Reader, you guys should actually check this book out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and you know, now to the main focus of our interview, we already knew what inspired you to write The Rise of the Reader in terms of, you know, how you actually was inspired by so many of these books that you've read and you want people to know how they can implement them in a sense. So can you share with us more in detail, like how can people actually make full use of the book that they have read? For example, if we are reading The Rise of the Reader, how can we really implement what has been taught from the book itself?
Absolutely. So this book, Rise of the Reader, has dozens of strategies in it. Remember, it's all about scheduling reading time, how to set the right intention for each book you read, how to take good notes, how to retain more, how to put them into action. So there's a ton in this book, but I'll give an example. Oftentimes when I meet somebody, I'll ask them, hey, what book are you reading? And they'll tell me, and I'll say, why? And then they'll just look at me like, what do you mean, why? And I love to say, we need to have an intention for each book that we read. We need to know exactly why we're reading it and what we expect to get from it, especially in the world of personal development and business, which I would imagine is the audience for your podcast, Race. And so let's say we're reading Rise of the Reader. Set an intention for the book that follows the SMART goal framework. SMART, as I'm sure a lot of us are familiar with, stands for specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, meaning you're emotionally connected to it, and time-bound. So when I set a goal for a book, I like to say, find and implement at least two strategies that I can use in my life by the end of the month, right? So that's kind of like the core framework. So for Rise of the Reader, you could set an intention like, I'd like to find and implement at least two new note-taking strategies for the books I'm reading by the end of October. And now write that intention on the inside cover so that each and every time you read the book, you're telling your brain what to filter for. That goal is specific. It's measurable. Find and implement at least two reading strategy or note-taking strategies. It's attainable. I didn't say make $100 million by the end of October. Just find and implement at least two strategies. It's relevant. I mean, it's relevant to my life because I'm reading and implementing these books. So why not get more out of them? And it's time bound. I gave myself a deadline to achieve it by the end of October. And so after you write it on the inside cover of the book and you review it each time you read a few more pages, your brain will start to filter for those note-taking strategies. And once you see them, they'll highlight, like they'll light up for you almost in your brain. And you'll go, that's exactly what I'm here for. Right. So again, set an intention, follow the SMART goal framework, and that will set you up for better action. Let's say I was reading How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. I would say find and implement at least two communication strategies by the end of October. Now, when you see opportunities to take action, your brain is filtering for them, they'll become so much more apparent. Let's say I was reading $100 million offers by Alex Hormozi. Find and implement at least two strategies for generating better offers in my business by the end of October. Again, you want to define a goal for each book that allows you to filter for action. And I think that's one of the steps that most people are missing.
Right. Okay, cool. I really love what you have mentioned in terms of setting intention for reading this book. Why are you reading this book? And if possible, you can find out two ways to implement this book in a sense. And wow, this is something that I'm gonna give it a try. I'm gonna give it a shot for the next few weeks. And we'll see how I can implement on the book that I'm reading currently, which is called Power. 48 Laws of Power by Robert Greene.
So yeah, I've had him on my podcast before. I interviewed him about that book. It's a really good book.
Oh, yes. It's really good. Really, really beautiful and yet dark as well.
You know what's interesting about that book? When I interviewed Robert, I remember asking him, like, you know, did you write this book so that people could get more power? And he said, no, I wrote it so that people could defend themselves against the darkness. So there's two ways to read the book. You can read it so that you can use the strategies, or you can read it so that you become more aware of how other people might be playing power games around you to defend yourself, which is really interesting.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's really interesting. When you say that, I was like, oh, okay. It's not so much about implementing as well. It's about how others are using those techniques on you, in a sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. All right. And hey, just want to ask you, right? I saw on your book There's this thing where it says how swapping 15 minutes of social media scrolling for 15 minutes of reading can dramatically impact 20 different areas of your life. Can you tell us briefly what this is all about and what are the 20 different areas of referring to in that book as well?
Yes, absolutely. So sometimes I'll meet people and they'll tell me, Nick, I'm not much of a reader, man. I can't read these books. And I say, if I paid you $10,000 to read a book by the end of the month, do you think you could do it? And that same person's like, well, I could read five, right? And they've fallen into my trap. It's not a question of whether or not you can read. It's a question of whether or not you value it enough to prioritize it. So right. Let's say that you do value it. You just don't know how to fit it into your calendar. I recommend, instead of trying to find time, replace a low impact activity like 15 minutes of social media in the morning or 15 minutes of Netflix in the evening with reading a good book. Replace low impact activities with high impact activities like reading. And so if you read for 15 minutes in the morning, and let's say you also read for 15 minutes in the evening, that's 30 minutes a day. For somebody who's just starting out, that's probably about 20 pages. If you could do that Monday through Friday, 20 pages a day, right? 10 in the morning, 10 in the evening, that's 100 pages a week. Now, you know, most of these books are 200 or 250 pages long these days, right? They're getting a little bit shorter. So that means if you read 100 pages a week, that's a book every 2 or 2.5 weeks. That's 20 different books or 26 different books that you can read about 26 different problems you're facing or 26 different skills that you develop or 26 different people that you want to learn more about by just replacing a little bit of social media in the morning and a little bit of social media or Netflix in the evening with reading a good book. So it's small steps in the right direction. And when I say the 20 different areas, I just mean that you can read 20 different books and these books can change your life. That's why we read, you know, to create impact and behavior change. Napoleon Hill said a good quote. He said, action is the real measure of intelligence. Action. We have to take action. And that's where all right. the magic happens.
Yep, totally, totally. It's not so much about just reading, but it's more or less implementing what they have taught so that you will have a much more renewed life in a sense. And you'll have a better habit and things like that. I truly agree with you that, you know, we can start off with reading 15 minutes a day and so on and so forth. And slowly, you know, you can finish a book within a month or even less than that. So, okay. And can you tell us, like, what are some of the methods for note-taking and information implementation for when we are reading a book?
Yeah, absolutely. So I only, you know, and this has changed so many times over the years, but today I only like to take notes on the things that are related to my intention. So when I used to read without an intention, I would take notes about anything that I thought was exciting. But what I realized over time was that that's not realistic. You can't retain 20 or 30 or 40 different things from a book, but what you can retain is 2 or 3 things that you put into action. So over time, I've just simplified the process. One of the biggest issues that I think people have, other than taking too many notes, is they try to multitask. So for me, I think about reading and note-taking as two completely separate activities, and we shouldn't be task switching between them. That's what I did for most of the years until I realized that I was multitasking, not monotasking. And when you multitask, you get out of a state of flow and you become really inefficient. So today when I'm reading a book, I review my intention and then I just read. And if I see something that I might want to take notes on, I'll just quickly highlight it, circle the page number, but I don't want to lose the momentum that I have while I'm reading. Then when I'm done with the book, now I go back through the whole book a second time. And then I rewrite all of my favorite takeaways and I try to simplify them. I create a list. So let's say your goal for Rise of the Reader is to find and implement at least 2 new note-taking strategies, right? Right. You're reading, you see one, you highlight it, but you don't stop reading, you continue reading. Once you're done with the book, you flip back through and you go, oh, hey, wow, I found like 10 different strategies in here that I could implement. Rewrite them, because Repetition, so rewriting them, repetition leads to retention. So rewrite those 10 or 15 takeaways. And then here's the kicker. Not every potential action is created equal, right? Some of them have more leverage and can create more impact. They're easier to implement. Sometimes people just treat every single action like they're the same. They're not. 20% of them might lead to 80% of the change. That's all you should implement. So I rewrite my notes once I'm done with the book, form a list, and then I decide what's the highest leverage activity that I should implement. Be realistic. Only one or two things from each book, or two or three things from each book. And then what I do is I take those two or three things and I plug them into my activity tracker. Now, this is where I lose people sometimes, but in the book, I do detail how to build your own activity tracker. I provide access to a free template that everybody can download and start to use. And by putting those actions in an activity tracker and setting a goal, like I'd like to implement these by the end of the month, and you put them right in your tracker and you look at that tracker every single day as you're doing your other activities, exercise, nutrition, reading, and implementation. And those are some of the things that I go into way more detail in for the book. But remember, reading and note-taking are two separate activities. Not every activity is created equal. And then if you can find the best activities and plug them into your activity tracker and build an accountability group of people that hold you accountable to taking action on them, now you have an entire ecosystem that will support you.
Okay, cool, nice. Okay, so you're saying that we should read first, and then after that, we reread the book again, and then we'll write down the notes that we have actually highlighted from there. Am I right?
Yeah, and when you reread, just reread the things that you've highlighted, not the whole book, just the most important information.
Right. Okay. Cool. And Nick, what are some of the habits that you like to inculcate to the audience who want to improve their health, wealth, and happiness?
Sure, I can give one example from each. So what I did in the back of this book was I included over 100 things that I've implemented from the books that I've read, just to give everybody an example of some healthy habits, some wealthy habits, and some happy habits. So as far as health goes, I write about all sorts of things. But I can give one example. I think we should all get outside and get sunlight before we consume caffeine. So caffeine is one of the most widely consumed drugs on the planet. Everybody's drinking coffee or tea. Right. People have pre-workout when they go to the gym. But if you consume caffeine too early in the day, you can kind of hit that afternoon slump and you'll feel very tired in the afternoon. So one of the healthy habits that I write about is right when you wake up, get outside and get a little bit of sunlight. It will do wonders for you. And I have all of the scientific evidence and reasons why you should be doing that. And then consume caffeine like 2 hours later. For wealthy habits, again, there's over 30 of them in the book. But surround yourself with wealthy people. That's one of my favorite ones. I mean, we are the average of the five people that we spend the most time with. So we might as well spend time around people who motivate us to take bigger action, who are already investing and can give us good advice on what to do with our money. So that's one of my favorite ones, is surround yourself with wealthy people. And then as far as happiness goes, I have a bunch of fun ones in there that I don't think I've seen anywhere else. For instance, every week I pull out my phone and I record a little 1 minute gratitude recap of my week. So it's a 1 minute highlight reel. And then I upload that to a Google Drive and I have it separated by year. So if I went to like 2022, I have 52 minutes. So I could condense all the videos down 52 minutes. And that's my entire year of gratitude. And it reinforces that behavior. It reinforces that feeling of gratitude. And if I'm ever feeling down, I can always just click into one of those folders, click on a random week, and see everything that I was grateful for. So yeah, that's a fun one.
Okay. Wow, this is something interesting. I'm going to give it a try, especially the gratitude one, where we do a video about what you're grateful for this week or this day as well. Okay, cool. And as we are coming to the end of the podcast, I have one last question for you, Nick, and that is this. Imagine this. you suddenly lose everything, your money, your assets, your reputation. What would you do from day one to day 30 to save yourself?
I would. That's a great question. I'd get on social media. I would tell everybody about my situation. I would ask for help. I would lean on my network. You know, none of us go at this alone. I've built a really interesting network with a lot of amazing people, and I'd get on there and I would ask for help. I would ask for guidance. I would rely on the people around me, my family, everything like that. Because again, I just think nobody should go at this alone. It's too hard. It's life is too complex. It's too hard. Read good books, have good people around you, build a good network. So that's what I think I would do to kind of save everything.
Oh, nice. Well, I love it. Love it. Especially you going to social media to share with the people around you to ask for help. But for you, you're willing to actually do it. Oh, that is simply amazing. And Nick, really thank you for, you know, what you have shared, all the golden nuggets that you have dropped here. Really appreciate it. And where can my audience find your book?
Well, I'll say this. If anybody wants a personal book recommendation from me, it's one of my favorite things to do. So DM me at BookThinkers on Instagram. We answer every DM. Sometimes it takes a few days. We get a lot of them. But tell me about a problem in your life. Tell me about a skill that you want to improve or a person you want to learn more about, and I'll make a book recommendation. And right from there, in the link in our bio, you can find access to the book. And by November 1st, it will be available globally in all sorts of online retailers. Right now, you know, Amazon is probably the best place to look for it.
Okay, cool. Wow. So for those of you who are tuning in, can actually check out Nick's book, Rise of the Reader. It is going to be something that you will need, and it will going to impact your life a lot more, especially with all the golden nuggets that he has dropped here. There's a lot more. There's a ton more in that book itself. Okay, so go check it out. And Nick, where can my audience find you on social media?
At BookThinkers, spelled just like it sounds, BookThinkers.
You guys can actually go to Instagram, go to LinkedIn, and go and find them, all right? You can even Google them, and then after that, you can actually get to check out the books and whatever that they have recommended over there as well, all right? So with that, I would like to thank each and every one of you for tuning in to the podcast, and of course, thank you, Nick, for dropping in so many amazing, amazing golden nuggets in the podcast itself. So thank you so much.
Yeah, and thank you for the opportunity to speak. I really enjoyed today's conversation.
Well, thank you. And all of you who are tuning in, stay tuned for the next episode of The Regazy Show, and see you guys real soon. Okay, good night and good day from the other side. Okay. Ciao. Thank you, everyone, for listening to another episode of The Regazy Show. I hope it has enlightened you. I hope it has brought you to an epiphany where you realize that this is where you want to go and this is what you want to do. So I hope you will continue to support and also, at the same time, like, comment, and share this episode out to your people, to your family, your friends. And not forgetting that, we have just created a Telegram group. It's called The Regazy Show Family. So you can go and check it out and let us know how you find this group is serving you. All right. So with that, I would like to thank you once again. See you. And stay tuned for another episode of The Regazy Show.